Okay, we are having this discussion in weekly on Tuesdays in English medium after the single medium discussion. Today I got a few minutes in between. Now we are going to start the English medium discussion. Welcome everyone for the participation. So we have exactly about 1 hour. So before going to the appointed topic from the Sutta Nipata, if anyone is having any new topics or suggestion or any other interview reports, I welcome before going to the main discussion. Niranja.
Namaste, Bhante. We have two reports received today session, Bhante. With your permission, I would like
yes,
to
present. Yes, please.
Yes, Bhante. Dear Bhante, I'm 15 years old and have been practicing for 3 years. This is my experience. Please advise me. I woke up before my alarm went off today. So instead of getting up, I closed my eyes and I started focusing on my breath. When I closed my eyes, very quickly, there was a ringing in my ears. I turned my awareness to the ringing, and as I kept focusing on it, I stopped taking notice of distractions like my thoughts. However, no matter how long I kept watching the ringing, it didn't go away. It was just my awareness and the ringing. It was like this for the rest of the practice until I was brought out of the state by my alarm going off. Theruvang saranai, Hasini. End of the report, Bhante.
So was it a mechanical alarm, that ringing bell? Alarm clock? Niranja?
Maybe, Bhante. It was not mentioned.
So if it is so, you have to remove the battery or switch it off. I mean, that is happening sometimes. But otherwise, there are eternal ringing inside your mind. That is a separate one. Sometimes when it is happening, we call, when medically it is called, tinnitus. And sometimes people take medicine. In the meditation, it is usually go into whenever mind and body calm, some hear it and they take it as an auspicious thing. Now I am calm and quiet. Some other people find it as you are alone, you are cornered and you are outcasted, and they become very vibrant, and doctors give some psychedelic medicine. And we translated 3 books so far on the sound of silence. We had to ask her whether it is a sound of silence or bell. But even then, she is fairly good in tackling them. And you can see while alarm happen, is your sleepiness disturbed, your breath disturbed, if your body posture disturbed. Or still you can see while the ringing happen, either you can sleep, either you can do in-breath and out-breath, or you can be aware that is your posture. That will be a great exercise. That will be quite a challenge. But challengeful exercise, and if you can make them 2 different issues, one thing under control, one thing not under control. I would say bell is not under control, but looking at the breath or focusing, adverting mind to the breath, up to you. So you have to understand which one is powerful. Please give more detail in the next time. Good that you being a young girl sharing with us. With that, we are going to the next part of the next report.
Yes, Bhante. Theruvan saranai, Bhante. I am a yogi practicing mindfulness under your guidance, and this is my walking and sitting meditation report. Walking meditation. Started the walking meditation by keeping attention on the movement of the feet. There was no need of any mental noting since the mind was able to concentrate without much effort. As the walking continued, the mind stayed away of the lifting, moving and placing of the feet. The moving pace was identified by a floating sensation, and the placing pace was identified through the hardness felt on my soles. As time progressed, the walking was done in an automatic manner and mind was just aware of the whole walking process. Sitting meditation. After an hour of walking meditation, I sat down for the sitting. Initially, mind was aware of the natural breathing through the rising and falling of the abdomen area. But the rising and falling could not be separated clearly, but an overall movement was felt in the abdomen. This movement was faded away after some time. The mind was calm and the awareness was open and spacious. The awareness of objects were seeming to flow freely without any intervention. Sounds were predominant and there were thoughts at times. These thoughts ceased as soon as they were noticed. As time progressed, the mind felt a craving towards the peaceful and effortless state, and therefore the attention and clarity of awareness decreased over time. I feel I should have exerted a bit more effort to maintain this state of stable manner. Looking forward to your guidance, Bhante. End of the report, Bhante.
So, I am drawing the attention to the latter part of the report we are sitting, and when the mind becomes calm and getting a distance from the primary object, and still you can maintain your mindfulness and peace of mind, that's a good achievement. Many people, when they are observing the object is disappearing, and the mindfulness also they consider as the fading off, but they think something wrong. No, that is the way things are happening effortlessly. Things are in an autopiloting mode. That's very prominent in walking meditation. And some people report them in a constructive way. Some people get lost. So therefore, Upandita Sayadaw used to say, it's the utter weakness of the teacher. That's why some people are reporting it in a negative way. So we have to take time, read the report, and encourage to look at it in a positive way, that your ego is dissolving and you are presenting and report writing is still positive. You can say, I see concrete, hard and fast object, and slowly it become mild and become mildest. So you can go deep and deep into the have to have not, explainable to explainable, unexplainable, boundaries to no boundaries. And many people get upset if they have mental instability. And this going into this kind of a thing, last time in the discussion, we got the early autistic signs. You're going deep into the object and you're close into the other sides, and you can see more you go into the object, it becomes null and void. And by the time you are completely cut off from the other senses. So therefore it is something related to vipassana, and still the world is stammering because some children go autistic. They are not concerned about what's happening. They are utterly concerned about something very inner. Of course it is the pathogenic. It is something. So recently I had a girl and she's fairly looking at the face and playing, and everything she throw. Again, then I gave some clay pots to throw. And then asked Manori. Manori says, Bhante, autistic signs are much arrogant in the males than females. Females can camouflage. But so far, I have seen a lot of female autistic signs. Sometimes they are also aggressive. But the males can't tackle it. When the males become the autistic, they can't cope up it. So they become quite abnormal in the world. So therefore, please ask that girl to come. I will talk, and I'm very happy to share with. And Manori came and participated in the last the English medium retreat also. I told, whenever meditating happened, that kind of thing happened. But many get upset. And outside people, just like parents, they also get upset, thinking the child is developing the autistic range behavior. So they are treated in the Theravada tradition as vipassana upaklesha or perversions. So Professor Padmachiri da Silva is utterly concerned now. He says, when the Vedana happen, how do you look? How must we look? What's the Theravada tradition is telling? So behave like a not seen, behave like a not heard, behave like not felt. It is autism. So this is a very interesting part. Only this is pertaining to the vipassana yogis, not for samatha. Samatha people, they throw away. They consider it as a negative. But in the Vipassana meditation centers, you can see people have that kind of thing. But this report, in this particular report, in the latter part, you have tackled this very nicely. That is why you can write it in a proper way. That is the code in the Buddha way. It says, Panasachi manasachi pasannena bhasativa karotiva tatona sukamangveti chakkang chayava anapayini. Dhammapada, second verse. Anything you can report in a pleasant mind, using the positive language, you are destined to end up with free of suffering. Just like the shadow is following you. So therefore, please encourage. Because I am with you in this report, I am encouraging. If you feel fit for you, do the same kind of meditation and write the report in the positive way. That is my remark.
That's the end of the reports, Bhante, for today.
Anyone wish to share with that report? No? You have no comments? So, if there are no comments, we can go to the our appointed topic, Mahavyuha Sutta. Thank you, Niranja. Niranja, Sanjana came and she participated last whole day, Sunday in Kaduvela, and he presented report. And she is 17 years old. Now we got entrance into the university. One of the Oman girls, but it is for the advanced level. Definitely she will be selected to the Green University. I was happy because I went to the university in age 23. So much of second chai, third chai only, and she got out of the ordinary level exam. Now she enrolled into the advanced level. So you all must be happy from Arabic countries. Okay, now we are going to hear from Venerable Buddha Rakhita.
Okay, so again, this is a dialogue between the Buddha and a replica of the Buddha that he met himself. And so the replica Buddha is asking the Buddha questions. And the reason that they're doing this is for the benefit of the devas who are listening to this dialogue. So these questions are quite subtle and deep. And just going back to the original first question, which was asked by the replica Buddha, he said, those who are settled in views, who dispute, saying, this alone is true, do all of them receive only blame, or do some there also win praise? I'm just going back to the original question, because the Buddha gives a long series of answers to this, and he tackles it in different ways. So today we've reached a part where he replies in answer to this question. The Buddha says, if he has fallen away from good behavior and observances, he trembles because he has failed in his action. He longs and yearns for purity here, like one on a journey who has lost his caravan. But having abandoned all good behavior and observances, and his deeds blameworthy and blameless, not yearning for either purity or impurity, one should live detached, not grasping peace. Dependent on austerity or scrupulousness, or on what is seen, heard, or sensed, running onwards, they declare purity, not rid of craving for various states of existences. For one who yearns, there are longings and tremblings, too, over things mentally formulated. For one here who has no passing away or rebirth, why would he tremble, and for what would he long? So here the Buddha, in this section, he really tackles this whole point that a lot of people in religious practice put so much emphasis on sila, on morality, on behavior, on observances and behaviors. And he tackles how once these people stop their practice of sila or of these behaviors, how they can feel lost or empty, because now they don't know what to do. Whereas the Dhamma is always a case of seeing things as they really are, rather than focusing on external practices and observances or rites or rituals. So the Dhamma is not something external, it's a very internal process, and it's a way of seeing and engaging with the world rather than some sort of artifice or some ritualistic way of encountering and moving through the world. So once this kind of artifice drops away, it's like an act. Now people don't know how to act, and they were a character in this act, in this play, and now they don't know how to behave, they don't know how to act, and so therefore they're trembling, and they don't know what to do. Whereas again, the proper practitioner in the Buddhist perspective is that the sila is supporting the practice, but it is not the whole practice. And it's not an act as well. The sila that we perform is not an act, but it is a means. It is something that is not the end, but the support to along the path. So having abandoned all good behavior and observances and these deeds blameworthy or blameless, not yearning for either purity or impurity, one should live detached, not grasping peace. So this is a very radical statement by the Buddha, where he, to some degree, cuts down these practices of rites, rituals, or sila. He cuts it down to something that's not to be hung on to. Again, I was thinking of this this parable of using a raft or a boat to cross a flood, and once you would cross that river or flood, then you wouldn't be carrying it on your head. So we let go of sila. It is a means. It is a support. It is a mechanism that's helpful, but it is not itself the goal of the holy life. So we live detached from sila itself. So when I'm in my kuti, or even to some degree really within the monastery, I don't really have to think very much about sila. It's sila for me only becomes extremely active when I leave the monastery, I'm in the city or something like that. Then the robes itself become the monastery, and all of the practices and behaviors of sila become very important. But within the monastery, it's very natural and very easy. And when I'm at my hut, I don't really have to think about sila, my practices, behaviors, or rituals, or anything like this. Then it's just a very natural experience for me. So I live life detached, not grasping to the peace. Here, not grasping to this peace of righteous behavior or sanctimonious behavior. I can live very naturally. Dependent on austerity or scrupulousness, or what is seen, heard, or sensed, running onwards, they declare purity, not rid of craving for various states of existence. So we have many, many states of existence. So we can have this state of existence of a kind of an external purity, where you form a glass house and you live within that glass house, and you have all these rules and you strictly follow the rules and you're very diligent with those rules. But these are just artifices. These are not, these are like a play, like an act. So we're just making up a story of how pure I am. But the real purity is the purity from defilements, these mental states. And this requires a journey inward to know the nature of the heart in an intimate way from moment to moment, and how we are processing life. So performing an act like an actor on a stage is not helping us to know our inner heart. We're running away from it, in fact, and we're creating an artificial kind of a purity, or a kind of a quiet state of existence. Like I said, we're living in a glass house, but this is just the deglises, the defilements taking a holiday and a break. And so once you leave your little glass house, once you leave your very stable and highly controlled existence, then the kalisas are there waiting for you again. So we shouldn't we should practice sila in a middle way where it is useful and supportive to the practice, but not in such a way that we're controlling or manipulating our environment so that we have a nice quiet time. But at the same time, we're just avoiding our kalisas, as I said. We should be... the more natural the practice is in the end, the more we give the opportunity for the kalisas to arise and be dealt with in a timely way. That's not to, on the other hand, push ourselves into bad situations. As I was advising a friend recently, we should avoid bad situations and avoid bad people. That's a good start. So it's certainly we should be careful in how we live our life, but we shouldn't be controlling it in such a way that our life becomes artificial and therefore we think, oh, I have purity. But in fact, it's just that the kalisas are on holiday. Perhaps we can listen to what Mahathero has to say about this section of the sutta.
Yeah, we are talking about the Buddha Jayanti book. The stanza number 903, Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, it may not be 903 because a little slight changes because all the suttas are going in stanzas. So Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, Mahavyuha Sutta, 898. In Tripitaka, this thing, 902. So that means four numbers changes. So I am reading the sutta verse, if I am correct. Siluttama sanyamena usuddhin vatang samadaya upattita se ideva sikhema atasa suddhin bahupanita kusalavadana. Some ascetics are telling morality is the highest. And by morality, by physical and verbal refinement, he become purified. That is what they say. Behave like elephants, behave like horse, behave like dogs and sheep. Therefore, ajavruta, govruta, likewise, they are utterly about the vruta. Other says, no. Your view is the most important thing, and you have to, by purifying your view, you must have purification. That is, some other says, the wholesome deed. These are two kinds of extremes. Some says only the morality, others says only the panya. So that is the imaginary Buddha is asking. So our Gautama the Buddha is giving the answer. That is what Venerable explaining. If someone is telling my sila, my ascetic practice is the only thing, if it is shaken, he will be completely lost. He will go mad. He is utterly lost because he is living on other sides. But I don't agree with Venerable. When I'm in the kuti, I don't care sila. When I go outside, don't the sila. No, that is not the way. Inside, outside, both, they are not the morality. There is not the interaction with people or civilization in the kuti, yes. But outside, it becomes a moral action because there are two, three people we are working with and they are also, they are psychiatric mental institutions get disturbed. So therefore, even if you are living in the kuti, there should have physical and verbal restraint. When you are going out, others can show at least. But if you are inside the kuti, if you are morally or physically and verbally relaxed, there is no one to correct you. So there should have moral standards. And you must have, whatever you do, moral stand must be there. But it become ethical, it become interactive with when you are living with other external world. So therefore, morality is not limited to the social life. Even you are in the solitude and in your own kuti, it must be there. And when mentioning Venerable Buddha Rakkita is mentioning that Dhamma is not outside, it is inside, maybe a slip of his mouth, tongue. But Dhamma is in and out. The reality, four elements, in and out. So therefore, when we are talking, sometimes you give the priority to the outside Dhamma, so that we may be reducing the weight to the inside Dhamma. Sometimes when we are giving heavy weight to the inside Dhamma, we may forget about outside Dhamma. So throughout, it is the same. So morality is something pertaining to the physical and verbal activities, and it cut off huge amount of defilements. So therefore, socially wise, if you are a moral being, whole society enlightened. As far as the society is concerned. But you as an individual, you have to go to your koti and see how is your mind. After frustrating the physical and verbal part, still the mind will be bloody wild. It may be utterly disturbed. So that some people can practice in the society itself. Group meditation is part and parcel of it. But there you must have sunyagara, go to a silent place and see, even I am calm and quiet in the physical and verbal, how is my mind? And you are the person practicing, you are the person judging, you are the person giving criteria. So therefore it becomes something mystics. But in the discussion like that, we express ourselves. When I am sitting, sometimes I am very happy with myself. Sometimes I am not happy because mind is disturbed. Externally, I can ask from you all. On 10th, we are going to ask openly in Pavarana. Bante, we have lived together 3 months. If I have done something wrong, if you have visually noticed or heard something or is suspicious, please let me know. Just like you go in front of a mirror. And that is called biggest culture of the Buddhism. We trust our co-practitioners. So therefore, Sila, after people reading Visuddhi Magga, it gave unwanted weight to the Sila. That's my judgment. Maybe I am wrong. But I would have not read the end of the Visuddhi Magga. I have read only the early part because it was starting with the Sila. And they have a little briefing about Vipassana. And exactly I can see Abhidharmata Sangraha, at the beginning so much of detail, at the end you have Vipassana in the gist. It's very concentrated. But people take that early part. That is what you call ism part of Buddha, Buddhism. But it is Buddha Dhamma, they are, Sila is necessary, just like the disinfection before the operation. The theater, the doctor, the equipments, the nurse, the patient, everyone must be disinfected. Otherwise, you can't take into the theater. Then only you can open. But there are some barefoot doctors cut the patient on the battlefield, and there they do operation without anesthesia. So that is equal barefoot doctor. That's also a must. But it is not, you must expect it is happening only in the war. Or in the, if an accident happened in the forest. So there you have to have. So Vipassana is talking about the barefoot doctor's operation. Some of the people is talking about the operation theater, ethics and etiquettes and kind of thing. So I am a controversial person in that sense. When I am starting mindfulness, I had all the precepts broken. I was just an angry young man. And I was thinking, I can kill animals, still I can be happy. I can talk about metta. I can rob. I can steal. This is my hobby, to go to the Sri Lankan hotels and have a cup of tea and sneak from the behind door, not paying. So some friends come with me. I loot from this thing and give them also. They get caught sometime, but I am not. And kamityachare? No one knows. They consider myself as a very ascetic because I am living in the household. 10 other members. No one knows. I am very familiar with the friends and kind of thing. But my inner group, they knows who am I. And lying, slandering, harsh words and tail carrying. Master. I can go to a conference and talk like a saint. But my friends, everyone knows. So I told Venerable Dhammika Bhante, please trust me. May I ask such a culprit? He told, good, because at least you are telling. And I am also the same. But practice mindfulness. Together with all these bastard characters, it works. Of course, it took 9 years. It took 9 years from 1777, 78 to the 88. Took 9 years, but I was vehemently trusting and trying not to say others that I am practicing mindfulness and just behave in the normal social life. And I found mindfulness can cut through. So if someone asks me, Bhante, what must come first, prajna or sila? I will say, you do and practice and see, because in my case, I was not with full of sila. So I can understand anyone who has broken sila, but I don't underestimate them. Still you can have, because mindfulness is such a choiceless awareness. And still being wrong in sila, you can understand. The day you understand you are more sila is not, that day is the real day going to change something. If you are telling doing wrong things still you consider good, while doing good things still you consider as you are wrong, I think you are mad. I think you are a psychiatric imbalance. Today all the monks, psychiatrically imbalanced, they are in asylum. Because before being a monk, I knew. They appear like a robed people and do all the sensuous pleasure and appear like saints. But I did not, I do not wish to have that kind of a role play. So lucky enough, I selected Nissanwani. No one interfered me. Because before becoming a monk, I went to Kanduboda. It was a real, real place. So me to understand as a layperson, practicing. And then luckily I got the connection to the Nissanwani. No one interfered me. So now I am the chief. Such a joke in Nissanwani. I say I don't care. But only thing is I don't accept the yogis, those who are brought here from the parents. That proxy won't work. That particular child, that particular person should have idea that I am immoral or moral, I want to practice. So I directly ask, are you concerned about to come and here live in the moral practice in the either in the kuti or outside? No, my mother is standing. I am telling, I am sorry. Ask mother to practice first. Because this is one-to-one relationship. So one Chinese girl, sorry, Japanese team came, and that was very the small hut we had for the meditation, this thing, and not much famous. Then he asked, Bhante, I heard that you are having group discussion. What is the minimum age you are accepting? Then to anyone who wish I must practice can come and practice. Anyone presented by others, I don't accept. So that is the point where parents got mistake today. They are bringing to the swimming pool, they are bringing to the meditation hall, they are taking to the tuition classes. But children are not that. And they are going to give reasoning. My child should have this and that. But the mothers and parents are utterly misbehaving. So therefore we people come here not due to someone's prompt. I appreciate it. Even a criminal don't care. It doesn't matter. So when we go to the prison, They are sentenced to death, a capital punishment. They can catch mindful, not all, so quickly, rather than moral people outside. They are completely white-clad and behaving in a very manneric way, and the prison chief also there. They are using a special language to the inmate. Then I tell you, bullshit, and you are killing this life and the last life and the future life, coming here and doing all the play hell. They are laughing. They are laughing because I am talking their language. I have no fear. I feel you criminal. Tell me your name. What is your crime? What is your experience in mindful meditation in sitting and walking? So then one person came, he came from the army, he has killed his father. And he came, I told, what about singing a song? Can I give the qualities of father? You bloody fellow, kill your father and going to come and sing. Okay, Bande, I am not going to sing. I am going to virtues of Buddha. This, you are such a contradictory character. After killing father, you come and praise father in the stage. So the communication happens. They are criminals. But they can understand mindfulness. And this is, we are lucky. We came to the prison and Bante came from other end, or Venerable Dhamma Vihari, we are practicing. So this verse, if you are going to measure the people by morality, his country morality is not my country morality. Arabic morality is not the Tibetan morality. It's culture based. There's no such a basic thing. Of course, Buddha is the only first person and the best person to tell. He says, no, sila is a starting point. And when you go to the prajna or wisdom, again you have to look into your sila with samma ditti, samma sankappa. Then only samma vacha, samma kammanta, samma ajiva can happen. But without samma ditti, samma sankappa, all the other things are becoming a silabbata paramasa. How do you call silabbata paramasa in English? Wrong sila. Taken in the as a ascetic practice, that just like gods, just like dogs. And it is being called Rupa Pramana, Gosa Pramana, Luka Pramana. If you are going to have very ascetic, very, very self-torturing kind of thing, people are very happy. But you are torturing yourself. Buddha says, first and foremost, get rid of that. Kamasukallikanu yoga, attakilamatanu yoga. If you go to India, you can see how much they are torturing themselves and people think they are enlightened. And Buddha himself did 6 years before the enlightenment. He says, I am sorry I did it, but I am telling you this much I have done for you. Don't repeat it, but read it what I did. But now he says, not only by sila. Sila must lead to panya, wisdom. And wisdom again, with the wisdom mind, you have to look into your sila. And that is the way other people are looking at you. Not the person with sila is looking at himself. And he is in a cage. He is in a attakilamatana yoga many of the time. So I tried my best to avoid them. Aseva nacha balana. Avoiding them is an auspicious thing. That is a Mangala Sutta. If they come, I am very sorry, I don't have time for you. Please torture yourself and don't come and torture me. I have no time to torture you. But I am a jolly good fellow. So people come with so much of proposals and kind of things. I have my clear-cut discrimination. If you have that kind of a thing, please. You are not in my army. I am a one-man army. I am very happy because I did all the wrong things. Still, I am happy because I was mindful about myself. So that is what I thought of sharing. That means that this is the first time, not the first time, Buddha is talking directly about sila, and he is asking himself the question. That is very, very important because lay people can't ask this question from the Buddha. They are criminals. They have committed the crime. So they can't. But the Buddha is asking from the Buddha himself, and the answer is very long. The question is black and white. But the answer, not black and white. So therefore, your life experiment one day will show you, don't measure the world only with sila. See sila samadhi panya, and then you will have a balanced look. That's all I have to tell.
Wasarai Bhante, thank you Mahasangha for all the wonderful comments so far. It was a good discussion. It has been a good discussion that we have been having so far. When we're talking about sila and mindfulness, I think it's important to again point out where the Buddha was mainly talking about in terms of these rites and rituals. Mainly he was talking about things like superstitious rituals, like, you know, I have to like light this fire, and supposedly if I light this fire, you know, rain will come, or if I like pray to some you know, rain deities, like rain will come, you know, and like putting flowers on a statue will cause like the rain to fall and stuff, you know, superstitious things, things that don't really make any sense. The Buddha was mainly referring to those things, I think, when he was talking about rites and rituals. Things like, you know, if I don't, I don't know, pray five times a day, I'll go to hell for all eternity. Things like that. Things that are like extremely dogmatic and self-torturing, as Bhante was saying not too long ago. Things like, you know, whipping yourself. You know, you'll see in some religions they like whip themselves constantly on the back, and I don't know what the purpose behind it. I think they think that they'll get something out of it, but that would be, you know, a ritual. I would say that would be rites and rituals too. So mainly the Buddha was talking about that, you know, sila in the sense of Dhamma. Like when we're talking about the Dhamma, sila is, yes, I would say a means. It's not the whole path. I mean, but it is a central aspect of the path. And it is there to support our practice, and we do need it, you know, to support our practice. And it's not a dogmatic kind of sila. You know, that's the important thing to point out. It's this understanding of, like, you know, I'm doing this. I, like, if I, you know, commit an offense, you know, if I'm a monk and I commit an offense and I go and do apati desana or something, or I go and confess the offense, it's this understanding, you know, when you're doing it, you should have this understanding that I am going to confess this offense because I am trying to take responsibility for what I did. I know, I recognize that I did something wrong, and I want to take responsibility for it, and I want to make the effort to not do it again in the future. So it's not really a thing of, you know, it's not a superstitious thing, like I'm whipping myself, you know, and then I believe that by whipping myself and scarring my back, or, you know, beating up my back with this rope, you know, I'm going to get something out of this. Like, you know, I'm somehow going to like have like a happy afterlife or something. You know, it's not a superstitious thing. I'm the sila in the Dhamma and in the Buddha's teachings is mainly about actually developing mindfulness. You know, it's a lot of it has to do with developing mindfulness. If I know that, you know, I am not supposed to take life, if I know I'm not supposed to kill other beings, then if I know that I've undertaken this precept, you know, and this is, you know, I have faith in the Buddha's teachings, and I know that I have undertaken this precept to not take life or to not kill other beings. So, you know, it naturally develops mindfulness, you know. When I see maybe an ant or a squirrel or another animal or another human being, you know, even if I get angry or upset with that animal or that human being, you know, if I have this urge to maybe harm them in any way, like physically, you know, then that's, if I've undertaken this precept, that's where the mindfulness will come in, and you'll remember, well, I just undertook this precept not to kill other living beings. So that will prevent you from taking the life of this other being. So sila is in the Buddha's teachings, it's mainly a way of developing mindfulness. You know, the way I understand it, it's a way of developing mindfulness, cultivating mindfulness, so that you can get into these wise habits of being harmless and committing skillful actions rather than unskillful actions. So that is my comment.
So while reading, I think there are no other comments, so I would like to take. While reading this Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation and the Tripitaka Buddha Jayanti translation, I would like to draw the attention into the very tiny, simple matter we often experience, that is when we are keeping the mind with the in-breath and out-breath, wandering mind can happen, daydreaming can happen, or fantasizing can happen. So those who are in the sila bata or in the wrong view, they get so upset about wandering mind, daydreaming, fantasizing. And ultimately they get tremble. They say, I can't practice Bhante, how can I stop wandering mind and all the kind of thing. But wandering mind is not your baby. is something happened. So how quickly you can come back to the primary object, unless otherwise you are not self-accusing. So the Buddha here, it says, according to Bhikkhu Bodhi, you come back to your own caravan. You are on the journey. You are just off the road. And but in the garamha, is the term using in Pali. Gara means your own house. But Bhikkhu Bodhi has taken this as the if he has fallen away from the good behavior and observances, he trembles because he has fallen in his action. He longs and yearns for purity here, like one on a journey who has lost his caravan. So we call, come back home, come back to the caravan, because caravan is always ready to accept you. You have just go off for your urination or any kind of defecation. So it is not a mistake. So that is the last lesson you learn in Vipassana. Mind is always wandering. Mind is always daydreaming, fantasizing. But that is not your volition. You just sit innocently to keep the mind with the in-breath and out-breath or left and the right. But wandering mind happen by trembling, by regretting, gain nothing. If you call this is sila, Buddha says it is sila bhata, sila vruta. Don't do it. This is not the Buddha says. So people, basically Buddhists are always regretting in meditation because they say sounds are disturbing me, pains are disturbing, thoughts are disturbing and daydreaming, fantasizing, disturbing me. But in my case, I am so thankful my early teachers, many are lay people, except Venerable Dhammika, they taught me mindfulness is not that regret. Mindfulness, the wandering mind is a natural thing. It is a mind. So why do you claim that my mind wandering? Wandering is mine? No. Instead, after latter part of my monkhood, I found Buddha says, come back to your caravan. Come back to your home. And come back home, Richard Davidson, they found a research. They put a person, well experienced person, into a functional MRI scan and told you can see a screen, just see. So he can monitor his brain, the hearing, seeing faculties are working. All of a sudden, while the monitoring is happening, functional MRI is happening, give us noise. And mind is just go away from seeing. And he monitor how quickly it can come back to the seeing. That's called resilience. And they found two neuronic stages. Understanding I am wrong. And naturally or with your intention, it come back to your primary object. Buddha gave four stages. Sarati, Vivarati, Uttani Karoti, Deseti. Meditator understand I am not in the mindfulness in the breath. That understanding itself is a mindfulness. And Vivarati, he says, yes, I supposed to be in the breath, but now I am in a sound. I am in a thought. And he really explained, mind is not with the tactile sensation, it's a visual, it's a sound. And then Uttani Karoti, he highlight, and then bring it back. Even if you bring back, as far as you are not including that into your interview report, you don't get the marks. Fourth stage is the most important. Because this is a Buddha Sasana, you can tell my mind went off, it went out to the sound, and I knew it, and by highlighting it, naturally, oh, with a little effort, it came back. And if you can tell like that, you are almost in Nibbana. Almost in Nibbana. And that part is well explained in the Vinaya Pitaka. But later I found that is also inside the Anguttara Nikaya and Majjhima Nikaya in two places. For my understanding, it's mentioned how to bring it back to your own caravan, how to bring it back your home. And Zen story says, wherever you may be, darling, you are on the way back home. Wherever you may be, you are on the way back home. Therefore, don't worry about the going astray, going wandering, and knowing that the moment you come back, your home is always ready to accept you. When Achan Brahm was a very young guy, one day he in British, he came to the platform, and father also came down from the car and mentioned he was a radical guy, he would have been. He says, whatever the mistake you do, don't worry, you can come back my home. Home is always open. He says, my father's mad. What is this talking about at the street? Now only he understands father has that much of compassion. Your friends will be chasing you. Outside will chase you. But mind you, my house is open. That's what the Buddha says. Your mindfulness is open to come back home. But all are criminals. They have no mercy. They always kill themselves, telling, wandering mind, daydreaming, fantasizing, blah, 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 blah. So that is what we try to teach in Nisanvani. We are not promoting mind for the wandering mind, but say, don't worry, come back to caravan. Any comments?
Thank you, Maha Thero. Thank you, Maha Sangha. Thank you also for the comments. I think Bhante makes a very good point about the caravan and the wandering mind and the remorse and regret. One sutta that I want to kind of bring to attention, I think it's called the simile of the conch shell or something.
Conch shell, anyway.
And in it, basically, Lord Buddha talks about those who hold the view that if you break any of these precepts, if you kill anything, then no matter what, you're going to hell. If you steal anything, then you're going to hell afterwards. If you commit some sexual misconduct, then hell is waiting for you, basically. And he said, then if you take the example of someone who follows that view, and they think, oh, I've done these things, I've been this kind of evil person, I'm going to hell, like there's nothing I can do, then, yeah, by that very view and that very remorse and regret, they actually do end up going to hell. But then he talks about the person who has committed these offenses and has lived unvirtuously, but then they hear the Buddha's teachings and they know that actually it's possible to more or less change one's future by their own present actions. Then they can abandon that sort of action and also abandon the remorse and regret that come with it. And in that sutta, in particular, it talks about developing the four Brahma-viharas, the divine abidings. And actually that very change in view is what helps them to not go to hell, and they can actually develop the noble path. So I know that I've experienced this for myself as well, that I think the use of sila in the Buddhist teachings and the Noble Eightfold Path is one, just to keep things harmonious with others, of course, but also with ourselves, because we can feel very remorseful if we've done something that we feel is wrong. But other times when I feel like, oh man, I've just messed up so bad, like there's no way that I'm not going to hell, then wisdom comes and says, okay, even if you are going to hell, then there's no reason not to have a loving attitude towards yourself and others. There's no reason not to keep doing good and to keep trying and to come back home and find the caravan. And so in that way, I think there's a big difference between these rites and rituals, where if you get something wrong, then like really the whole act is a failure. Like it's done for, there's no hope for you, basically. And so if you fall from that, then your whole idea of purity and your hope for any sort of salvation is finished. But in the Dhamma, as I understand it, you can just get back up and keep going from where you left off. And sometimes you fall and maybe take a few steps back, but the caravan is still going, and we can still have this right view and cultivate right thoughts of renunciation and loving kindness. And that way it actually purifies both our past deeds or the results of them and also our present ones, which make the path a bit more smoother in the long run. So I think that's a good kind of distinction to make between these different types of silas and how can we actually relate to them, because we all will fall in from our ideas of perfection, what's right and wrong some time to another. And we need to have compassion for ourselves that way. So those are my comments for today. Thank you.
Avasarai Bhante. Yeah, I just wanted to go off of what Bhante just said. And that was the, you know, gist of my comment too, was, you know, there's a, you know, a big difference between Sila and the Buddha's teachings and Sila and other religions, whereas Sila in most other religions, if not all other religions or spiritual paths, is very, you could say, dogmatic, or, you know, torturing yourself with the whole, you know, some religions, you'll see them whipping themselves on the back with like these ropes. I think they're trying to imitate how their prophets or their teachers were like beaten and stuff like that. And they're like trying to imitate, or they're trying to be closer to their prophets or teachers, and they like whip themselves on the back and stuff like that, you know, things like that, things where you're actually harming yourself. That's the kind of sila or morality that you see in a lot of other religions and spiritual paths, is where it's, you know, very dogmatic. It's like, you know, beat yourself up, or if you get it wrong, you're going to hell for all eternity, you know, and there's like no way you can save yourself. Whereas sila in the Buddha's teachings is a lot more about caring about yourself, and it's about seeing how, you know, not living a moral and virtuous life actually harms you. It's about saying that I want to get it right, you know, and you can always, as Bhante was just saying, you can, when you fall down, you can always get back up. You can always realize, okay, I did the wrong thing, but now I can get back up and I can do the right thing next time. And it's about caring about yourself. It's about making sure that you can live harmoniously with the rest of the world and with yourself. And it removes a lot of remorse and regret and doubt and you know, other hindrances and defilements. It's about caring about yourself. Sila in the Buddha's teachings is about caring about yourself. So that is my comment.
So now it is almost time up. So this is what Kohlberg mentioned about the hidden curriculum in the present education. In education, they are, children are allowed to make any mistakes and just keep it them. But there's accumulation inside the mind, tension and frustration. Ultimately, more education, more tension. By the traditional Buddhist way, they are kept in the religious atmosphere, less mistake, but they are free. And hidden curriculum is always capitalism, always making children for the factory workers, and they become a modern slaves. Buddhist education, first thing is suffering. And within the suffering, you are educating. And no hidden curriculum. And after learning the hidden curriculum, India incorporated their hidden curriculum, their Indian culture into the Indian education. America completely lost. They are hiring other people from the other countries. America is not giving any money for the education now. So whatever the job arising in America, it is for the best other people. Indian people are the best for American best companies and IT technologies. And if the Indians are no more, they are controlling Americans. I'm sorry, I'm mentioning the name. This hidden curriculum is not in Buddhist teaching. Because truth of suffering is there. There's no heaven. There's no nothing. But what you, after education, what you happen is, you are put into the factory in the chain. They are just robots. And everyone is intention. So that part, very difficult to teach, because Sri Lankan education department is utterly following this thing. And now they are talking about the education reform. Accept it. Even the minister accept. State minister accept. Secretary accept. So I told, why can't you put the mindfulness into that? No, it will become religious. No. Don't put mindfulness, just say, bear attention. And lucky enough, I am to mention, they have had an interfaith discussion, and one monkey was practicing here. I was not there. They agreed five things. Respecting elders, respect to the environment, respecting mindfulness, and fourth one, and the other one is the peace. So last minute he mentioned to the minister, Bante, we had the interfaith, and fourth in mindfulness. Then the assistant said, oh, Dhammajiva Amatru is there in the Zoom. Minister also said, I am also waiting to him to talk. Then I told, I am very happy. I am not making everyone Buddhist. I am taking Buddhist morality. Be mindful whatever you do. Don't listen to the teacher. Teacher come with the tie and coat and everything like a disciplined man to the classroom and talk nonsense. He never set a moral standard. So that is what happened to Sri Lanka. I don't know whether we are in a turning point for that kind of thing, but this indicates still the caravan is going. Please come back to caravan. So we'll take time next week. Thank you very much for the participation.